听力课堂，听 class.com。
Unit 3, Section A. The head of the U.S. Space Agency, NASA, says the investigation of the cause of the Columbia Space Shuttle disaster will be thorough and completed as quickly as possible so America can begin sending people back into space. At least three government agencies and an independent panel of experts are involved in the probe. Five of the seven crew members aboard the ill-fated Columbia Space Shuttle were with the Air Force or Navy. Those two military services, along with NASA, are conducting the investigation of radio transmissions between Columbia's crew to Mission Control in Houston, Texas. An independent panel of investigators will also look into the disaster. The team will be headed by Admiral Harold Geman, who chaired the official investigation into the October 2000 bombing of the destroyer USS Cole in the Gulf of Oman. Investigators will analyze the debris and data from military, government, and commercial satellites for evidence that might tell them why the Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated as it re-entered Earth's atmosphere, killing all seven crew members. In an interview on the television's Fox News Sunday, NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe said no possible cause is being ruled out. "We are leaving nothing to chance. We are looking at every piece of evidence. We are securing all the debris and assuring that we look at every possible angle of what could have caused this horrible accident," Mr. O'Keefe said. Mr. O'Keefe vowed to find answers to the disaster so the shuttle program can be running again as soon as possible. "A major consideration is the three astronauts, two Americans and a Russian, who are aboard the International Space Station, a permanent scientific outpost in orbit. The three are scheduled to return to Earth in March. For the time being, NASA has placed a moratorium on shuttle flights, but Mr. O'Keefe is hopeful a space shuttle will be able to retrieve them. We are certainly not ruling out any possibility, and we are preparing for being ready to launch whenever necessary, once we have found the correction," he said. The space station astronauts have enough supplies to last them until June if necessary. They are regularly resupplied by Russian cargo craft and have a Soyuz space capsule at the station for an emergency return to Earth.
Section B. 1. His topic is interesting, but he spoke so badly that many people got up and left in the middle of his speech.
2. The line was so long that there were no seats left when we finally got to the head of it.
3. This supermarket is selling everything half price because they are going out of business.
4. I never could have bought the sneakers if the shoe store wasn't having a big sale.
5. Jane said that she would be happy to come to our graduation, but she has to work on her paper next week.
6. I have no time to look at this proposal. How does late this afternoon sound?
7. I'm not the only one in the School of Economics to graduate with honors.
8. To be frank with you, I would rather do anything but cook.
9. I have been doing a part-time teaching job, so I have enough money to last the rest of the semester.
10. The summer position we advertised in the paper is still available.
Section C. A. A U.S. teacher designated to fly on a future space shuttle mission says she accepts the risks despite the death of 7 astronauts on the Columbia orbiter in February. She spoke to high school students on Wednesday, the 45th anniversary of the U.S. Space Agency, NASA. Barbara Morgan, a teacher from the western U.S. state of Idaho, may be the world's most patient person. NASA chose her 18 years ago for a program to send teachers into space. But her dream was set back when NASA canceled the program after teacher Krista McAuliffe and six other astronauts died in the 1986 Shuttle Challenger explosion. NASA reinstated the program 5 years ago and began training Ms. Morgan for a mission to the International Space Station scheduled for next month. But her patience was tested again when the Columbia tragedy delayed all shuttle excursions indefinitely. NASA hopes to return shuttles to flight by the middle of next year after making a series of technical and organizational improvements recommended by experts who investigated the Columbia accident. Ms. Morgan continues to train for her mission, but she told Washington area high school students that the two shuttle accidents caused her to consider flight risks seriously. However, she says she dismissed them as less important than the potential gains of the mission, which will expand the space station. "I can't think of anything more important than you guys, our future and your future. I'm doing this for education and doing this for the learning and the things that we can do to bring back, not just for our country, but for the whole human race. And once you've made that decision, you go forward and you really don't dwell on the risk."
B. The head of NASA, Sean O'Keefe, told the students that the agency intends to carry out all of the investigators' flight safety recommendations before shuttles launch again. He says they will address the technical flaws and the human errors found to be at fault in the disaster. NASA hopes to overcome two major problems that currently restrict the length and distance of space missions. One is how to limit the ravages of weightlessness on the body. The other is how to develop new propulsion systems that would shorten the long journey to Mars and beyond. Under current methods, it would take 15 years to reach the edge of the solar system. Mr. O'Keefe says, "Now, we can't afford that kind of time because most of the American people won't be patient enough, and most scientists won't be patient enough for that long a span of time for one mission. So it's something we have to look at, of how you evolve that capability to get places sooner in a way that will give us the opportunity to spend time there really exploring." The NASA chief says the U.S. Space Agency's Project Prometheus aims to develop a nuclear reactor to propel spaceships at least 3 times faster than current technology.
C. Police said that about 500 homes were washed away by floods after rain struck the west coast of the island yesterday, bringing driving rain and winds of up to 84 miles per hour. The typhoon flooded wide areas of Taiwan and crippled communications and power supplies. All domestic flights were cancelled yesterday, and Taipei's international airport was closed for about 5 hours. Government radio reported that 2 passenger ferries had been sunk, but gave no details of casualties. The work of emergency relief teams is being hampered by blocked roads and the loss of power and telephone communications in central regions. It will be some time before we hear the final casualty figures. Police in New York last night seized 33 kilos of pure heroin with a street value of $70 million in what officials said was one of the biggest U.S. drug seizures in 10 years. The one-month-old occupation of a Michelin tire factory in Belgium ended today when workers voted to accept an agreement which guarantees them full pay for a year. Russia will help India prospect for onshore oil under an agreement signed in Moscow today, the official news agency reported. And the main news today, 29 people were killed and 10 were reported missing when Typhoon Wayne ripped across central Taiwan last night. And now over to Bob Taylor.
D. I've been in earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, seen tidal waves, volcanoes erupting, floods, just about everything, all possible natural disasters. But I think the most frightening experience was being involved in a bus crash. This was in Africa, in a bus which was going through the countryside on a dirt road. It was a bus crowded with people, crowded with luggage, and the bus had stopped at a small town, at a bar, where the driver had a few beers, and then loaded a crate of beer on the bus on the roof rack. When we eventually set off from that place, the driver got up speed and suddenly ran off the road. I remember the bus turning over two or three times, and eventually the bus came to rest upside down. All I could feel was a tremendous bang on the head, which later turned out to be the crate of beer. There was dead silence, absolute shocked silence, and it was a long way from any town or any village, and the only thing you could hear was the engine. The driver ran away into the bush. He was frightened, so everybody crawled out through the back window and left their suitcases and possessions, and everyone was terrified the bus would explode. And eventually someone had the sense to turn the engine off, and we all crawled back in again to get our possessions, and no one seemed particularly injured. Everyone was just shocked and stunned, and it was only after about 10 or 15 minutes of sitting on the ground that people began to collapse and become unconscious and suddenly appear very seriously injured. Eventually a lorry came and took us to hospital, and it was only in hospital I realized just how serious it was. A girl sitting next to me on the bus was also sitting next to me in the hospital, and the nurse was asking her age, her religion, etc., etc., and suddenly the girl just lay down and died, and three other people who had been sitting near me also died.
Section D. On December 5, 1945, at 2 p.m., a group of five United States Navy airplanes took off in perfect weather for a practice flight over the Atlantic Ocean. 2 hours later, the captain of the group, Lieutenant Charles Taylor, radioed back that he was completely lost. He said that the plane's compasses were going crazy and that he could see no land, and then his radio died. The Navy sent another plane to search for the missing group, but it disappeared too. By the end of that day, 6 airplanes and 27 men had disappeared in a mysterious area known as the Bermuda Triangle. This is just one of many frightening stories that people love to tell about the Bermuda Triangle, which is located in the West Atlantic Ocean between Miami, Florida, the island of Bermuda, and the island of Puerto Rico. Over the years, more than 100 planes, ships, and small boats, and more than 1,000 people have been lost in this area. Many of them disappeared in the middle of the day, in perfect weather. And in most cases, to make the stories even more mysterious, no wreckage or survivors have ever been found. The planes and ships have simply disappeared. There is no doubt that there is something strange, perhaps even mysterious, about this part of the Atlantic. The question is, what is it? How can we explain the disappearance of so many ships and planes in this region? In this lecture, we will examine some of the official, as well as the more imaginative, explanations that people have offered over the years. The United States Navy does not believe that there is anything mysterious about the triangle. It says that all the accidents are the result of the special geographical features of this area. These features include the Gulf Stream current, which flows rapidly through the area, many underwater canyons, and changeable, often violent weather patterns. In addition, the triangle has an unusual magnetic characteristic that causes compasses in this area to point to true north instead of magnetic north. If the navigator of a ship or plane forgets this fact, he can easily get lost in the Bermuda Triangle. The Navy believes that this is probably what happened to the 5 Navy airplanes that I mentioned at the beginning of this talk. In conclusion, the Navy believes that the disappearances of so many ships and planes can be explained by human error, changing weather, or magnetic abnormalities. Some of the other theories concerning the many accidents in the triangle are a little bit difficult to believe. For example, John Wallace Spencer, who wrote a book called Limbo of the Lost, believes that creatures from outer space have established a civilization in the triangle's underwater canyons, which have never been explored. He thinks that these alien creatures wanted human beings for their underwater zoo, and that they caused the disappearances. A similar theory states that the planes and ships disappeared because unidentified flying objects from outer space, UFOs, attacked them. People who believe this theory refer to the fact that many of the missing planes and ships reported seeing strange white lights before they suddenly disappeared. As you can see, there are many theories to explain the strange things that have happened in the Bermuda Triangle. There have been many books and TV shows about this subject, and there was even a special exposition at the Library of Congress. Nevertheless, thousands of people continue to travel in this popular area. Do these tourists ever wonder if they too will disappear in the depths of the Bermuda Triangle?
Unit 4, Section A. An AIDS vaccine tested for 3 years in North America, Europe, and Australia has proven disappointing but not worthless. The California drug company Vaxgen says its AIDS vaccine did not show a statistically significant reduction in HIV infection in a group of 5,000 volunteers. The firm's chief executive is Dr. Lance Gordon. "Certainly, we were disappointed that the vaccine did not induce a reduction in infections in all populations," he said. But when the test results are broken down by subgroup, the differences are dramatic. Whites and Hispanics, the majority of the study population, did not benefit. But research scientist Michael Pera says for blacks, Asians, or other minorities who were vaccinated, the infection rate was significantly lower. The black, Asian, and other subgroup showed clear evidence of vaccine efficacy, with an efficacy of 66.8%, said Michael Pera. When the smaller group of just black volunteers was considered, we see a vaccine efficacy of 78.3%. Both of these are highly significant. The drug company says it does not know yet if racial differences or differences in the virus cause the broad variation in infection rate. It will continue to refine the data with a more thorough analysis and by continuing to collect results from study participants. Vaxgen says it could conduct further study of the groups in which it proved effective in order to market the vaccine. Global health officials find hope in the results, although the vaccine did not help most of those who received it. The vaccine tested in North America, Europe, and Australia would not necessarily work in Africa or other parts of the world, since each region has its own HIV strain. 11 HIV subtypes have been identified. The World Health Organization says one of the major challenges is to develop a vaccine effective against all the major strains. Vaxgen is conducting a second vaccine trial in Thailand for the subtypes prevalent in Southeast Asia and expects to report results later this year. It is also at an early stage of developing a vaccine for the HIV strains common in sub-Saharan Africa, China, and India, which account for half of the world's infections.
Section B.
1. The woman must have been wrongly accused. She was just not strong enough to have caused so much damage.
2. Bored with all those unrealistic plots, I never want to see another film about space travel.
3. I hear that Mitchell quitted her job. I wonder how she can make ends meet.
4. Tom would sooner do without a car than pay all that money for one.
5. 5 days of heavy rain washed away so many seeds that the farmer had to replant his field.
6. June thought the orchestra performed well, but Mike thought the contrary.
7. The more we discuss the trip, the less likely it seems we can afford it.
8. The medicine my doctor gave me is not helping much. I have to go back and try to get it changed.
9. I've been meaning to exchange my new shirt for a larger size.
10. I've tried several times to tell Carl the concert begins at 8, but the line has been busy.
Section C. A. A new global coalition has been formed to improve access to AIDS drugs in developing countries. The coalition unites several governments, international agencies, philanthropies, businesses, non-governmental organizations, and research institutions. The gap between the number of people around the world who need AIDS drugs and the number getting them is enormous. The World Health Organization estimates that of the 40 million HIV patients in developing countries, only 300,000 get the antiretroviral therapies that halt HIV's replication. The new grouping, the International HIV Treatment Access Coalition, is working toward a modest closing of that gap. It has adopted the WHO's goal of increasing the number of patients on AIDS drugs to 3 million by 2005, a tenfold increase. WHO Director General Gro Harlem Brundtland, whose organization is a member, announced the formation of the coalition at a Geneva ceremony Thursday. The president of the International AIDS Society, Joep Leng, says making AIDS drugs more widely available requires a united effort. The coalition says AIDS drug prices are coming down, an increasing amount of donor money is available for AIDS programs, and more countries are committed to providing treatment for their HIV patients. As a result, the coalition seeks to play a coordinating role to help remove barriers to drug distribution and use. Mr. Lang says this includes setting up reliable drug procurement systems, better sharing of information about what works in successful treatment programs, and training healthcare workers about the drugs.
B. The human form of mad cow disease, an incurable brain-wasting illness that's killed more than 100 people in Britain, has claimed its first Canadian victim. Canadian health officials confirmed Thursday that the unidentified man died sometime this summer. The man, who lived in the western province of Saskatchewan, contracted the disease from eating contaminated meat while traveling in Britain. Dr. Antonio Guy Levy, an official with the government agency Health Canada, quickly moved to calm fears by assuring the public the disease had not entered the Canadian food supply. All evidence, and I repeat all evidence, points to the person having acquired a variant of this disease from multiple stays, long-term stays, in the UK, he said. The disease is believed to be caused when ground parts of diseased cattle are mixed into cattle feed and those cows are turned into processed meats for human consumption. Though the disease cannot be confirmed until an autopsy is performed on the dead brain, symptoms of human infection include uncontrolled shaking, dementia, and finally paralysis. But while government officials insisted safeguards are in place to keep the disease out of Canadian meat, warnings were issued to 71 patients at the hospital where the infected man was treated before his illness was identified. Those patients had been treated with the same medical instruments used on the diseased man. Though the instruments were cleaned and disinfected, officials said a theoretical possibility remains that those people could have been infected.
C. Increasingly, over the past 10 years, people, especially young people, have become aware of the need to change their eating habits, because much of the food they eat, particularly processed foods, is not good for the health. Consequently, there has been a growing interest in natural foods, foods which do not contain chemical additives and which have not been affected by chemical fertilizers widely used in farming today. Natural foods, for example, are vegetables, fruit and grain, which have been grown in soil that is rich in organic matter. In simple terms, this means that the soil has been nourished by unused vegetable matter, which provides it with essential vitamins and minerals. This in itself is a natural process compared with the use of chemicals and fertilizers, the main purpose of which is to increase the amount but not the quality of foods grown in commercial farming areas. Natural foods also include animals which have been allowed to feed and move freely in healthy pastures. Compare this with what happens in the mass production of poultry. There are battery farms, for example, where thousands of chickens live crowded together in one building and are fed on food which is little better than rubbish. Chickens kept in this way are not only tasteless as food, they also produce eggs which lack important vitamins. There are other aspects of healthy eating which are now receiving increasing attention from experts on diet. Take, for example, the question of sugar. This is actually a non-essential food, although a natural alternative, such as honey, can be used to sweeten food if this is necessary. We can in fact do without it. It is not that sugar is harmful in itself, but it does seem to be an additive. The quantity we used has grown steadily over the last 2 centuries, and in Britain today, each person consumes an average of 20 pounds a year. Yet all it does is to provide us with energy in the form of calories. There are no vitamins in it, no minerals, and no fiber. It is significant that nowadays fiber is considered to be an important part of a healthy diet. In white bread, for example, the fiber has been removed, but it is present in unrefined flour and, of course, in vegetables. It is interesting to note that in countries where the national diet contains large quantities of unrefined flour and vegetables, certain diseases are comparatively rare. Hence the emphasis is placed on the eating of wholemeal bread and more vegetables by modern experts on healthy eating.
D. You asked me to tell you how we should keep fit. Well, really, what we should do is to try to keep fit all round. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean such things as keeping up our strength and our suppleness and our stamina. Now, you may say, why do we need all three of those things? Well, strength is useful really just so that we don't strain muscles or pull ligaments and tendons when we suddenly have to do something a bit energetic, like lift a heavy suitcase, or perhaps shift a wardrobe, or even get out of a chair or a bath. Suppleness is important, obviously, so that you can bend and move freely and reach things, again, without injuring yourself. And stamina is particularly important, so that you can sort of keep going without losing breath, so you have endurance. One other great plus about developing stamina is that you maintain your stamina over a period of years. It actually has an effect of protecting the heart against heart disease. You may ask, out of those three, which is the most important? Well, it depends who you are and what you want to do. I mean, the reason for keeping fit is to keep it for your way of life, the life you choose. Now, you may say, well, if I choose to sort of flop about in an armchair all day watching telly, I don't need to keep very fit, do I? Well, that's unfortunately not true, because there are always times when you have to make a little bit of extra demand on your body. By force of circumstance, you may have to suddenly lift something heavy, or move something, or may have to run for a bus, or whatever. In which case, you do yourself an injury, and you may even actually harm something important, like your heart. So it is important to actually try to keep your fitness a little bit ahead of the sort of way of life that you have. Just to push yourself just that little bit harder and get yourself just that little bit fitter.
Section D. A new data shows that the global AIDS pandemic will cause a sharp drop in life expectancy in dozens of countries. In some cases, declines of almost 3 decades. Several nations are losing a century of progress in extending the length of life. A U.S. Census Bureau study released at the conference reveals that nations in every part of the world, 51 in all, are suffering declining life expectancies because of an increasing prevalence of HIV infection. The impact is occurring in Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean, but is greatest in sub-Saharan Africa, a region with only 10% of the world's population, but 70% of its HIV infections. The author of the U.S. Census report, Karen Stanicky, says some developing countries are avoiding the slide, but most are not. 7 African countries have life expectancies of less than 40 years. For example, in Botswana, where 39% of the adult population is infected with HIV, life expectancy is 39 years. But by 2010, it will be less than 27 years. Without AIDS, it would have been 74 years. The U.S. report predicts a similar outcome for Mozambique, while projections for life expectancies in South Africa, Swaziland, Angola, Lesotho, Namibia, and Rwanda range from 33 to just under 37 years. The U.S. figures also show that life expectancies throughout the Caribbean and some Central American nations will drop into the 60s by 2010, when they would otherwise been in the 70s without AIDS. In Cambodia and Burma, they are predicted to decline to around 60 years old from what would have been in the mid-60s. Even in countries where the number of new infections is dropping, such as Thailand, Uganda, and Senegal, the U.S. report forecasts small life expectancy drops. Ms. Danicki says another result of the AIDS pandemic is a loss of population in the hardest-hit African countries where there are more deaths than births. The U.S. Census study also points out that AIDS is boosting infant mortality rates, again, mainly in Africa. This is reversing a decline occurring in the 1980s and early 1990s. Although overall global rates are expected to decline by 2010, there will be more infant deaths than if AIDS had never developed. The Assistant Administrator for Global Health at the U.S. Agency for International Development, Ann Peterson, calls the trends outlined in the study staggering. The UN AIDS program says $10 billion is needed to slow the HIV pandemic, but has commitments of less than one-third of that amount from the affected nations, donor countries, and multilateral agencies.